This is Brett.
And this is Steve.
And we're just talking about Star Wars all the time on the Skywalk. Wow, it feels really weird saying all the stuff that Jeff usually says. Welcome back to the Skywalk, Moof Milkers. Jeff is not here today, as you can tell, but today I am very happy to have our pal, Steve McMahon, a.k.a. better known on this podcast as Steelbook Steve. Welcome, Steve, back to the Skywalk.
It's a pleasure, Brett. Thanks for having me. Good morning.
Oh, man, this is going to be so much fun, Steve. We're here, of course, to talk about the Book of Boba Fett, Chapter 2, the title of which, Steve, I believe is The Tribes of Tatooine. Is that right? Did I get that right?
Yeah, I forget.
Yeah, well, it better be right because we're not making any edits today. But before we get into the episode, as always, social medias. This is where the good Moof Milkers can find us on social media on Apple Podcasts. Search for The Skywalk. Sky as in sky and walk as in the thing you cook in, spelled W-O-K. Subscribe there and leave us a review. Spotify, same deal. The Skywalk, three words. And by the way, you can now review us on Spotify. So please do that when you get a chance. Leave us 5 stars or else leave us nothing because you're dead to us. Disgracebook, facebook.com/theskywalk. Twitter @theskywalk. Instagram, theskywalk. And I can't do the Jeff voice, Steve. By the way, Steve, as you can tell, I feel like we have a rule on the Skywalk that I can only have as co-host someone whose voice is 18 decibels lower than mine. Or octaves lower than mine?
Yes. Octaves would be the right.
Octaves, not decibels, right. Octaves, my bad. No cuts. On Podomatic, we are StarWarsOverCoffee.podomatic.com. And all the other social media platforms, Stitcher, Podbean, Amazon, Google, Player FM, Audible, Odyssey, iHeartRadio, Himalaya, and more.
Did you make some of those up?
No, every time I read those, Jeff thinks I'm making up half of them. And then Jeff throws in some fake ones. And I'm like, no, these are all real. These aren't like the Bill Belichick social meteors, like Snapface or whatever. Steve, it's super good to have you back. Just to give the Moof Milkers a little background. Steve and I have known each other for a long time. So we are old friends and we are old friends.
Mm-hmm.
Steve, I was thinking today, I don't remember when we met or who we met through. You know, usually you remember like, oh, we met through this mutual friend. There's like a dozen people I think that could be. I don't know if you remember, but I don't.
Probably 1998.
Yeah.
It was probably Matt Burton.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. That was my key suspect.
Probably.
Yeah, Matt.
But yeah, it's been a long, circuitous path to the Skywalk.
Yeah, and you've been on the Skywalk before. Steve was on I believe it was our solo A Star Wars Story pregame show that you appeared on, if I'm not mistaken.
Right? Yes, that was in studio.
In studio, yes, when we used to do that. Good times. Go back and listen to that, Moof Milkers. It was fun. Steve, we're going to skip the failbag today. We're going to save that for when Jeff is back. Jeff, by the way, is in Jedi Academy this week, so he couldn't be with us. But he will be back for our next episode. We're going to save the failbag because, first of all, this was a really long episode of the Book of Boba Fett. And we have so much to cover. There is so much to talk about.
I got so excited when I saw the runtime at 52 minutes.
Right?
Scrolled down the app this morning, saw it, and I'm like, yeah.
And you know what's funny about that? Like last night I was looking, because, you know, usually at some point there's some website that breaks the runtime somehow or they release that somewhere. And I couldn't find anything about it. And the only thing I found was someone claiming that Lucasfilm had confirmed that the episodes are between 35 and 45 minutes. So I'm thinking like, all right.
Oh, that's.
Yeah.
Right. That's a huge, huge nugget right there.
Yeah. Well, it would be if it was true.
35 to 45 minutes TV show. No way.
No, you don't suppose. But then, you know, sure enough, turn it on. It's 52 or 53.
Right above.
Somewhere in there. Right.
But you are right. It is the Tribes of Tatooine.
The Tribes of Tatooine. So, Steve, we're going to do the same thing that Jeff and I did last time. We have not told each other what we think of this episode yet. And we're going to do that on the count of three. In just like a one or two word phrase or whatever, we're going to tell each other what we think of this episode in 3, 2, 1. Amazing.
Really enjoyed it.
All right. Okay. All right. Wow. Steve, wait. Are you telling me that you were not absolutely blown away by this episode?
No, I was not. I was not absolutely blown away.
Wow. Really?
No.
Wow. This is awesome.
In fact, at one point I was worried.
Really? All right.
And it wasn't a worry that I wasn't liking it, yep, or that my kids weren't liking it. I am still a little worried about what kind of garbage we're going to have floating out there with fan dissatisfaction, especially considering how the first episode transpired. I was getting that vibe.
Oh no.
Initially in the show.
All right. Well, so that's good to know. So actually, so what you're saying is there was nothing in the episode that worried you. It's more what the reaction would be.
Right. Cause there's tons of, there's still building his backstory.
Right.
And it's taken a while. I like the fact that it's taking a while.
Yeah.
We're getting good stuff, especially this. I think the stuff we got in this one for the flashbacks / backstory was a little richer than
absolutely
the first episode.
Yeah. So Steve, maybe before we get into chapter two, you could sum up for us, what was your opinion of chapter one? Since we didn't have you last time.
I was so excited to see live action Star Wars that I, for quite a while after watching the episode, I did not have an objective point of view. I was over the moon to have it back.
Right.
And then after listening to some pinheads online and, you know, getting opinions from people I do value.
Right.
There were some things in the episode that go look at and kind of laugh at and wonder why, but
right.
I still really liked it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wish it was 10, 12 minutes longer, but
I feel whatever. The exact same way. And I'm glad you mentioned that. So there was sort of an admission that I want to make, Steve, from our last episode. So in our last episode, Jeff and I talked about how we sort of agreed on something. And what we said was that we are perfectly happy to get sort of the same old Star Wars, but a little bit different. And yes, there are some people who criticize that viewpoint, right? Where it's like, oh, all you Star Wars fans, you just want the same thing over and over again. And we were saying like, yeah, that's kind of true. And we just want it to be a little bit different. And for example, the cantina, right? The sanctuary, as it's called, we now know. It's kind of like the other cantinas, but different. You know, it's a cantina. Mm-hmm. It literally has the same music as the cantina on Mos Eisley.
And we got that in this episode too.
Yeah, and we got it again.
To a smaller degree. Yep.
And it's like the cantina, but different. And I am happy with that. And when I say it though, I mean it more from an aesthetic standpoint. Like, mm-hmm, I want to see things that look very much at home in the Star Wars universe, but I do want them to be a little different. Like, I want to see that expanded on. And that's generally what they do. How I don't always mean that, though, is like, I do want new things from the story. And I understand, and I guess part of it is like, I've sort of set my expectations, especially for the TV shows, that essentially they're all going to be about the same theme, which is almost always redemption, right? And I get the vibes from this show that this is the redemption of Boba Fett, right? And I'm kind of okay with that for certain things. When it comes to the movies, I feel differently. And that is one reason why, Steve, and I don't know if you agree with me or not, but I love The Last Jedi to death. It is absolutely my favorite of all the new Star Wars movies. The reason being for me is that it really did go different places story-wise. It never felt like it was just aping things that happened in the past. That's my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I think along with that, you got amazingly new things that we've never seen before, like Crate, which on the surface, literally on the surface, looks like Hoth. And I think that's like a fascinating parallel, right? Where it's just like, yeah, if you just like scrape it with your finger, you'll see that it is quite different below. The scene in the Millennium Falcon flying through the caverns of Crait is, to me, perhaps the most beautiful thing I've seen in all of Star Wars. So for me, I do want new things from story. And to tell you the truth, Steve, I think we're kind of getting both with this show, because I thought it was going to be, you know, chapter one, it did seem silly at times. And as much as I loved it, I also read a negative review of it. I read a hilarious review.
Way.
I think it was in, yeah, believe it or not, Steve, there was a Star Wars fan with a negative opinion. And I think it was in the San Francisco Gate or something. I don't know. Somehow I came across this thing. And it was an absolutely scathing review of chapter one. And the thing is, I didn't disagree with anything the guy said. And yet I loved it. So I'm like, yeah, you know, you pointed out this thing and you're right. And
you pointed out. I bet that dude loves Batman versus Superman.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and Justice League was even better. I mean, you know.
The Snyderverse.
Snyder cut.
Anyway.
Yeah. So I just think, I don't know. This. So coming up to chapter two, mm-hmm. I think it started like, all right, it's the same sort of, it feels kind of basic at first, the story. But it actually went places I really didn't expect. And I think, and like you said, Steve, I think there is this time period where we're so like enraptured and there's this like at least temporary, maybe it's the spice that a Tusken Raider blew in our face, that we have this like ecstatic joy immediately after watching the show. And then when the dust settles, it's like, okay, what did I really think, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad we're recording this episode with the spice dust still fresh. You know,
yeah.
But I really do think this episode was a lot more complex. I thought there was a lot more heart. Steve, so, okay, I want to start off. I have a bunch of random notes about the episode, and we can just go wherever we want to go with this and talk about whatever you want to talk about, whatever I want to talk about this episode. One of the things that I jotted down, about halfway through this episode, Steve, I thought to myself, there is no way Robert Rodriguez directed this episode, because there was so much, I felt like there was so much heart. There was a lot of nuance. There was a lot of like the pacing was, I thought, fantastic. I was never bored. And
no. Okay.
There were parts where I was like, wow, that is actually pretty moving. And there was sort of a complexity to it that I don't think you saw in chapter one. So I don't know. So when you get to the credits, and it said, directed by Steph Green. Steve, have you ever heard of Steph Green?
Nope.
All right. Neither had I. So my note initially was, who the heck is Steph Green? Then
right.
I looked it up on IMDb. And I'm just going to read you this real quick. Steph Green, she's amazing. Like, first of all, I'm going to say, she did such an incredible job on this episode. I love Steph Green. I want more Steph Green Star Wars. Steph Green is an Oscar and Emmy nominated film and TV director whose cinematic projects range from independent features to award-winning television. Here's what she's done, Steve. She has directed top TV shows such as The Americans, Man in the High Castle, You're the Worst, and Billions. Most recently, she was nominated for an Emmy in 2020 for Outstanding Directing in a Limited Series for her work on the highly acclaimed HBO series Watchmen. So I was, man, like, that's a lot.
There might have been one of those shows I hadn't heard of before, but the other ones are at least well reported on.
Yes, exactly. I haven't seen many of them, if any, but
no.
Yeah, very, very well received critically. So I guess now knowing who she is, we shouldn't be surprised. But man, like I was so pleasantly surprised by this episode. And I think Steph Green is probably a big part of the reason why. Also, again, episode written by Jon Favreau, who I just think tries harder at times than others, but you know, it's really hard to write like
maybe,
write a whole season
maybe.
Of a TV
yeah.
show, right? You know,
mm-hmm.
So they're not all going to be winners. Steve, what do you think of the score? So we've had a couple weeks now to let this new Boba theme settle in on us. How do you feel about it?
I think it's okay.
Yeah.
I enjoy it. It's not getting in my way of watching. So, sometimes every now and then you'll be watching something and the music will be not volume wise, but make you raise an eyebrow.
Like too much.
This music is just in the background. It's not getting in my way. There's definitely a cue here or there that makes me think of The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
It makes me think of Rocky.
Yep.
Which is from Goran.
Right. Yep.
Yeah, I just forgot his whole name, so that's why I said
Ludwig.
That.
But Ludwig Mandalorensen Goransson.
Perfect. Yeah. But the score is nice.
Yeah.
I have no problems with it. I'm happy with it.
I can't get it out of my head, Steve. I'm singing it in the shower.
I think it's a little simpler.
Yeah.
I think there was more going on in the Mandalorian score, but who knows? I'm not a music critic.
Yeah, I like it. I noticed in the credits for this one that Ludwig, it said something like he created the themes or something, but somebody else is actually scoring the episodes. So it's kind of like okay. Solo, you know, where John Williams, I think, wrote the Solo theme, but it was, what was the guy's name? John Powell, I think, was the composer for the movie.
Yes.
So that's kind of cool, you know? And I think maybe with so much Star Wars content coming out, you know, you can't have like 5 TV shows in a year and they're all scored by Ludwig, you know? So
might be a little much.
Yeah, that might be a little bit much. I think he's got at least a kid or two. So, you know, let him spend some time with his family, you know? Just write the main score. Steve, question.
Yeah.
For your eagle eyes, was that... I feel like in the first scene... Actually, you know what? Let me go back to the beginning, Steve. I thought the opening shot was beautiful. We got a really nice pan.
The rise up to Jabba's palace?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think if you're like me, Steve, you've been wanting to see that sort of thing since 1983.
Yes.
Yeah. I thought that was awesome. Then I think the Rancor, quote unquote, scene was terrific, too. I really liked that dynamic.
I thought that was funny because as soon as they opened the door to the pit,
right.
I'm like, okay, what's down there?
Yeah.
What's...
Yeah.
And then the suspense, the thing opens and there's a little rat running around in there. I was actually expecting a more snarky comment from Fennec or somebody up.
Yeah. What did she say?
There's no Rancor in there, you idiot.
Yeah, that was pretty good. I was expecting, honestly, I was expecting like maybe a baby Rancor. I thought like maybe they got a young one, which I think we saw like in the Bad Batch, right? But that was, I guess, the original Rancor as a kid.
Oh, yeah, I guess.
Rancor prequel.
Yeah. They got to be the same guy, yeah.
Yeah, of course. But I thought maybe they got a new one, or maybe they got some other creature that's going to be down there. Of course, I was thinking, like, there's no way there's going to be a Rancor, right? And sure enough, there wasn't. I thought that scene was pretty fun. So then they end up going back, Steve, to the city, which do you remember the name of the city where the...
I believe that's Mos Espa.
Mos Espa, okay.
Which... Going back to A New Hope and Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, Mos Eisley is tiny.
Right.
It really just is a little spaceport as opposed to Mos Espa, which I really don't remember seeing before. I don't know if it was in an animated anything, but it was way bigger than I ever expected Mos Espa to be.
Right.
From looking at Mos Eisley.
Right.
So that's pretty cool. But I love that they dragged that punk assassin down the street.
Yep. And I think so I was wondering, right? Like, I don't know if you noticed when they show Mos Espa at the beginning of that scene, they do like the aerial shot.
Yeah.
There's a ship in the distance that sort of looks like the Razor Crest. But I don't know if you noticed that. So maybe on your next time through. Yeah. I'll be curious. Maybe I'm sure somebody online has already waited on that. Another question for you, Steve. Do you think, so you mentioned the humor. I really did like the humor too in that Rancor scene. Do you think the humor is at times a little too sitcom-y? Like for me, I'll give you an example. When they walk into the mayor's office, the dude behind the desk bothered me a little bit. I'm like, this dude's like a little too 7-Eleven for like Mos Espa in the Star Wars universe, but... Again, not a big complaint.
No, I didn't have a problem with it, any of the comedic aspects that we've gotten on the TV shows. There were a couple moments in some of the sequel trilogy movies that I kind of raised an eyebrow with, but at the same point, I'm like, I look back at the original trilogy and the amount of times that I laugh is
right.
It doesn't matter,
right?
So, but what I do like the Ithorian,
Oh, yeah.
Remember from the Ithorian is the mayor of Mos Espa. Mm-hmm. In the previews, you really, all we heard was a human voice speaking basic,
right.
Or not human, but you at least heard somebody speaking regular basic language.
Right.
trying not to say English, you know, for the, you know, in world here, in universe. But he had some sort of translator device, which I thought was cool, because I remember reading about Ithorians and they had a completely different language and they sounded weird and they had four throats.
Yep.
And
which is gross. And you can see his like side mouth moving, which I think is really cool. Yeah.
But one thing that made me pause, and people have theorized as to who this mayor was.
Yep.
Because the only other like name brand Ithorian we've had in recent times ever was the guy from Black Spire Outpost.
Right.
Doc Ondar. Ondar.
Yeah.
Which this is not him. This is a different dude. And his name escapes me, unfortunately, but it's not Doc Ondar. It is Mok Shaiz.
Mok Shaiz.
Mok Shaiz.
Yeah.
In which Boba Fett said his name, and I had to rewind it once or twice to kind of really hear it, because it was kind of quick.
Yep.
But yeah.
I think, so for me, Steve, this might have been my favorite part of the episode. Well, just the, at least aesthetically, I think the building that the mayor is housed in, I think his... Mm-hmm. His quarters there where they go in to talk to him. Yeah.
That was not palatial. That was just, it was right behind the desk.
Yeah. It was pretty chill. It's just like, oh, he's just in a room in the middle of a room. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Steve, that's kind of how I just described like handicapped bathrooms before. It's like, you feel like you're going to the bathroom in the middle of a gymnasium. And it's like, this is kind of how this dude's room is. Like, he's just like on a throne in the middle of a big room. Of course, he's well guarded, which is cool. But man, like his digs, I was like, I don't know, man. That is some peak Star Wars right there.
His guards didn't seem like total stooges either.
No, they actually seemed pretty good.
Yeah.
You know? Really loved that. Then, Steve, the thing that happens after that, they come out. They go back to the cantina.
They head over to Flash Nance.
Yep.
You didn't hear? Then they head out into the street.
Oh, you didn't know that Hutts are coming for you? You know?
You didn't know?
We all knew, right? We all knew. And Fennec, by the way, says she pays attention to everyone, right? Like, she's on everything. But they didn't know that there were Hutts coming. But anyway, the Hutts. Like, there are things on this show. And I guess this has been the same with The Mandalorian, too. I guess The Mandalorian, we never knew what was coming, especially in season one. Didn't know what to expect. Mm-hmm. And I found myself constantly pleasantly surprised by that show. I feel like we should expect these things now. And I think Jeff even mentioned last episode something about, you know, will we see some Hutts in this show? I was still surprised, Steve, that we get two Hutt twins rolling up in Mos Espa to confront Boba.
I was surprised by the twins aspect. I wasn't necessarily surprised by the Hutts aspect of it, of them showing up. I thought we got one of the least believable aspects of Star Wars in recent times right in that scene.
Okay. What was it?
Those fools were holding those two slugs up on that platform.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Come
yeah,
on.
Yeah.
Come on. There was no repulsor lift underneath there. Nothing. Really?
That's true.
All right. That
Well, if you notice, Steve, the platform was buckling.
It was blowing. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, like it was literally buckling in the middle, which I thought was a good touch.
For mercy.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Why would you do that? You know, do they not know about Boston Dynamics?
They didn't seem in funny. Listening to the last episode.
Yeah.
You guys saying that just triggered the scenes in my head because it didn't even occur to me. And frankly, I thought it was funny.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, I mean, it didn't bother me a ton. I would love to not have that in my Star Wars, but you know, it's not my Star Wars.
No, but those guys holding them up. Come on.
Oh man. That's true.
They didn't look tough. They didn't look like, you know.
Yeah. They didn't look capable of holding up two. I mean, what do they weigh? No, like they got to weigh a ton a piece at least.
If that was a whole team of Gamorreans.
Yeah.
I could have bought it.
Right. Right.
I'm buying it anyway, but it looked funny.
I know what you mean. I was a little, I mean, I'm not even going to say disappointed because I guess I've resigned myself that they are never going to try a practical effect Hutt ever again, which I think is a real shame. Last episode, you know, I was talking about in preparation for this show, Steve, I went back and rewatched Return of the Jedi for the 35th time. And I just, I can never get over how good Jabba looks, you know?
Yeah, we haven't had a Hutt in any iteration
of live action
since Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
in a live action setting.
Right.
That looked anywhere near as good as what it did in 83.
Right, right. So
that ridiculous 1997 first special edition cut in A New Hope.
Oof.
Yeah. The replacement looked rough.
Yeah.
You know, the huts and the Phantom Menace look rough.
Yep. I mean, I think at the very least, these two huts look pretty. I mean, it's the best looking.
Yeah, definitely.
You know,
I'll give them that.
Second to original Jabba, I think these are the best looking ones. But I mean, you can still tell they're CG. Steve, are these, I don't know if you know this, if you don't, it's totally okay. You know, I'm not going to kick you off the podcast or anything, but are those huts like established characters elsewhere in Star Wars canon or lore or legends or whatever?
I don't have any reference to them being actually named.
Okay. All right. So these are not like huts that showed up on the Clone Wars or anything.
They're not that I know of. They're cousins of Jabba's.
Okay.
And they're twins.
Yeah. So it seems like a pretty big family.
Brother, sister. Yeah.
Yeah. Someday we'll get a hut family reunion. Then Steve, another one. So again, like one surprise after another, then we get this crazy rough looking Charbacca, as I'm calling him.
Okay. So you don't know him.
No, I don't know him. So like, he looks familiar to me and I felt like, well, is this dude in Legends too? Or
I don't know if he's in Legends. I won't speak to that.
Okay.
I don't remember him from any of my Legends novels. Mm-hmm. And I didn't read any comics.
Okay.
And I didn't read any Legends comics.
You never read any Star Wars comics, do you?
I dabbled once Marvel got back involved after the Disney purchase.
Okay.
I did.
Yep.
But too many came out and just punted on it.
Yep.
And this guy is featured in the Dr. Aphra comics. He appears in one of the first Darth Vader comics back in 2015. His name is Black Chrysanthemum.
Okay. Yep. I've heard of him.
He's an established current canon, if you will, character in the comics.
Yeah.
And this is our first view of him in live action.
Man. Yeah. I don't know about you. I thought he was pretty awesome.
He was. I was hoping we'd see him throw down, but.
Yeah. Oh, it's coming.
Then you have to think about, okay, is he going to throw down right now? Are we going to lose him immediately? Because we're not going to lose Fennec or Boba right now.
Right.
So,
right.
It makes more sense that he didn't fight yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he looked cool. As soon as I saw him, I'm like, okay, I've seen him before. And I just didn't remember his name until I'm looking at wonderful Wikipedia, the bastion of knowledge.
Yes. Oh, man, Wikipedia. Like, what would we do without it? I thought he looked great. Like, I think just visually, man, they did such a good job on him. So, like, I can forgive the generic assassins from last week now that we have that dude.
Oh, the guys with the... The guys with the little red force shields.
Yeah. I'm not a huge fan of those, but you know, they're just
team parkour
Boba fodder. So I guess it's okay. But this Wookiee looked great, and yeah, I'm sure we're gonna get that, Steve. We're gonna get a throwdown. We're gonna get a really good throwdown. And the other thing I like about like that standoff, I thought was really good, because you know, the one concern that people have had and I've had is like, are we making Boba too soft? You know. Is he going to be like too gentle and too, you know, respecting unity or whatever?
He's definitely a changed man.
Yeah.
Since the Sarlacc pit.
Mm-hmm.
But we saw his performance out on Tython.
Yeah. Right.
Against the stormtroopers.
He
wasn't there to play. But
yeah,
it seems like he's got a bit of a humanity streak going.
Yeah, and what's really cool, and I think that's what's great about the show, right? So they've established, like, he's throwing his weight around a bit. And I was just, like, it was really cool to see him, like, he did not flinch in front of, I mean, this is the Hutts, right? And if you know Star Wars, you know that, like, if you're dealing with two Hutts, like, you're dealing with this big criminal organization. It's not just, like, one Hut you're dealing with, right? So the fact that, you know, him and Fennec didn't flinch at all, nor did the Gamorrean bros, I thought that was pretty awesome. And like you said, and that's like a good segue, Steve, because I think what's becoming clear, like, you know, when Boba showed up in The Mandalorian, I was like, I don't know if I dig his new look. And then when they said, you know, respect and unity for this show, it's like, I don't know if that's really Boba. But then we get to, at this point in the episode, we go back to flashback land to Boba's time with the Tusken Raiders. And everything is starting to become crystal clear. First of all, Steve, it occurred to me at the very beginning and became way more clear by the end of the episode. I have no doubt. I'm going to tell you right now where I think this show is going. I think ultimately what's going to happen is somebody's coming for Boba, either the Hutts and all of their, you know, gigantic, you know, whatever organization that they have, or it's the mayor or whatever other criminal syndicates. I've heard rumors, Steve, you probably have too, about other criminal organizations. I won't even mention it now in case people weren't thinking that way. Let people be surprised, right? That could show up and challenge Boba for the throne on Tatooine. I think that's going to happen. And when it does, I think what we will see is Boba bringing in his army of Tusken Raiders. And maybe that even grows, right? Because it looks like by the end of the episode, you have a couple things happening. Boba is ingratiating himself to the tribe, obviously, right? So he has basically become one of them by the end of the show. And again, I think all of that was handled so beautifully. The way they gave him his black robes, which I didn't put together till a little earlier in the episode, like, oh, that's why he's got the black robes under his armor.
You know, they were bestowed upon him.
They were bestowed, right? Like he earned it by taking out this big Amtrak with, you know, the pikes on board, which we'll get to. But also that, you know, he's becoming one of them. He's also unifying them. And maybe this is where the respect and unity comes in, right? And maybe giving us a glimpse that maybe they'll unite with some other Tusken Raider tribes.
And that scene where he's talking about they don't need to be hidden anymore.
Right.
And they should be able to come out.
Yep. So it's like,
it's
all making sense, you know? And what's also making sense too, is like, you know, another concern I had going back to the Mandalorian was like, are we making Tusken Raiders too nice? But now we're finding out like they're all different, you know, some tribes comes out in this episode, some of them survive by killing, you know, and others of us aren't like that, dude. So I think that's pretty cool that we're getting all that. And I think that's inevitably what we're going to get. And so going back full circle to something we mentioned earlier, when I say I like to see the same thing, but different, like I do think this is going to fall back to sort of a cliched sort of story. And I'm okay with that. Of sort of like, you know, there's a little bit of Dances with Wolves going on here, or Avatar, you know, where Boba becomes one of the natives and then sort of leads, you know, leads this revolt on
John Dunbar.
Dumbear? you know, he's going to lead a revolt on Tatooine. But anyway, I love it. I think it's all awesome. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's probably where it's going. One thing I think they should try harder to do, Steve. Get the Banthas down, okay?
Yeah, those things drop. those things are just target practice.
Yeah, it's like
every time the last train to Dunesville rolls by, it starts shooting. Banthas just start falling.
Like if you can't, like I think is that like an actual known saying in Star Wars? Like if you can't hit the side of a Bantha, I mean, you're surrounded by sand dunes. If you can't, like, can you just get them over a dune? Which, by the way, you know, that's one of those funny little story things, Steve. Like, okay, so there's a train that comes through here and routinely picks you guys off. You live in tents. Could you not move over a dune or two to get out of the way of this train?
Right. And yeah, but there's a million examples of that in our little universe. But
totally okay, though. Totally okay.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about something, though. Let's talk about Boba showing up like he's the new sheriff in town to that little cantina.
Oh, my goodness. You mean Boba Fester the bar brawler?
Oh, man.
Which also, couldn't they give him something more than his onesie when he heads off and says, hey, I'm about to save us all. I'll be back by morning. And they're like, yeah go ahead in that.
They didn't know what he was doing.
Yeah, they didn't know. They didn't know.
But I had to do a little research on this.
Yep.
But and if Wikipedia is to be believed, apparently that's Tosche Station.
No.
Yeah. I've heard nobody else talk about this. I haven't been online much.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Apparently that's Tosche Station, which is funny.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to go back to the deleted scenes from A New Hope and see what Tosche Station looked like then or in that iteration, if that's even true.
Oh, So I do remember seeing, yeah, that's where like Biggs and everybody's hanging out and they're having like an American Biggs Graffiti moment.
Biggs and Cammy.
Yep.
And what's her, and Lays. Lays.
Lays.
Lone Osner or Loney Osner. I don't know how you say his name. Apparently, do you remember them from the deleted scenes?
Yes.
In A New Hope? That potential Luke girlfriend and that other dude?
Yep.
That is them. That is them in the scene in the Book of Boba Fett.
No way.
Yeah.
Really? Wow, that's amazing. Wait, so are power converters like a mixed drink? Because
I can see why Uncle Owen was, you know, a little hesitant, a little, come on back.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Apparently that's Starship Station, though.
Well, you know what I like about that even more is that they didn't say that. Like,
yeah.
You know,
I'm going to Toshi Station.
Yeah. Oh, I got to go to Toshi Station.
Sand people don't care what that name is.
Yeah. Take out some Marauders.
Right.
So I'm assuming you loved that scene like I did. I mean,
that was pretty cool. Yes.
Kind of your classic Roadhouse scene, but like in Boba style, which was pretty great. And just the whole thing of like, you know, the Tusken Raiders are teaching him their fighting style, which is like, you know, which that's cool too. And so, you know, a big picture point here, Steve, is that even after last week's episode, even with the story being a little simplistic, I kind of reminded myself like, you know, you should have faith. Steve, this is like when the Patriots lose a couple games early in a season and people start freaking out. It's like, you know,
like every year.
Yeah. Like every year. Like, you know, I don't know if you're aware, but Bill Belichick has a decent track record of getting things straightened out. And, you know, I'm starting to feel the same way about this show where it was like after chapter one, it was like, well, that was pretty basic. Like, is that, you know, are those the kind of stories we can expect? And I reminded myself at the time, Steve, like, we got to have a little faith in Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni. Like, totally, totally.
We have no reason to not have it.
No reason to not to. Mm-hmm. And we saw that between Mandalorian seasons one and two, where sometimes something would happen in an episode and you're like, oh, that was kind of lame. But then you find out later why it happened. And to me, the fact, like, there is no doubt in my mind that when they filmed the Boba Fett episode of Mandalorian season two, they knew all this backstory already. Like, they gave him the black robes because they knew. He could fight, you know, and I asked at the time, like, wait, like, since when does he fight like that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is that just because, you know, I have to admit, I faulted Robert Rodriguez, like, oh, he just likes tough guy stuff. And he just wanted Boba to like beat the crap out of people. But I was wrong. You know, like there's a reason for it.
Well, your point about not sure why they do it and then later on finding out why they did it or getting some sort of payoff as to why they did it. Mando season one, the prison break episode with the group of brand new thugs. And okay, now we get standard comedian Bill Burr there.
Yeah, kid.
As a standalone episode, it that's really what it was. I mean, there were some connections leading in and out of the episode, but really they could have done something a little bit different and not had that episode at all.
Right. You wouldn't miss it.
No. Fast forward to the, you know, the penultimate season two episode finale. Bill Burr's a star of the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was awesome.
And it even came into the second episode of season two when when Mando gets pulled over in space by the New Republic police. You know, the whole reason they do that is because of, they come back and save him at the end of that episode too.
They come back and save him. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's all because of what happened.
Frog ladies.
Yeah.
Frog ladies' eggs and Baby Yoda sucking the spider goo down.
Yeah. Oh man. You know, I had a name for those people and now I'm forgetting what it was.
The spiders or the frog ladies?
The frog ladies' husband, Senor Frog. That's what it was. But yeah, like, and that's when, you know, that's the point that I realized, like, wow, even in an episode, and I never really cared for that episode, The Prisoner, but even in an episode that I didn't like that much, there's stuff in there that matters and that comes into play, and there's consequences too. Like, Boba just doesn't, I mean, Boba, Mando, same thing. Mando doesn't just go in and raid this new Republic prison ship with no consequences. Like, something's going to come back later. And I think that's great. And I think, like, you know, from this point on, you know, like, I feel bad that I even doubted it at all last week, even though I, you know, quickly caught myself. And I'm like, what am I doing? You know, like, have faith in these guys. They know what they're doing.
Slow down.
It's all going to be okay. It's all going to be good. Steve, I think maybe the last thing, unless you have anything else, you know, and feel free if there's anything we're missing here. These are just my notes, but the train sequence is, to me, one of the best action sequences in any Star Wars.
That was really good.
I thought it was amazing.
Really good.
Yeah.
When I was watching it live, I didn't realize who the people were that were on the train.
Yeah.
And they poked their head up. When they poked their head up out of the hatch, at the time the same people in Boba got on top of the thing, I'm like, are those Tito's? Are those Tito's from Jakku?
Oh.
Those dudes. I was looking at my kids. I'm like, are those Tito's? And they're both like, huh? Tito's. They're both looking at me funny. And no, it's the Pike Syndicate.
It's the Pikes.
The Pikes.
Yes. Yep. Previously seen in Solo, A Star Wars Story, also seen in the final season of, I mean, I think they're in a lot of Clone Wars. They showed up in the final season of the Clone Wars.
I forget.
Yeah. But yeah, and they're from the Spice Mines of Kessel, as it turns out. So we're also finding out, like, so Boba really is becoming like Clint Eastwood, you know? He's like, you guys selling drugs in my neighborhood? Right. Better not be.
Get off my sand.
But you know what's great about that too, Steve? Is that they actually talk about spice. They are not erasing spice from the history of Star Wars. Because that was a thing with Solo where it's like, look, we know that Han ran spice. But then this whole thing turns out to be about coaxium. And it's like, shouldn't it be about spice? But, you know, and a lot of people felt like, well, Disney wants to clean it up for the kids and we don't want Han dealing drugs or whatever. It's like, come on. Like, you know, we know what's up. So it's really great to see, you know, this is a really bad soundbite for anybody to pull from this. But it's really great to see people dealing drugs in Star Wars again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This is my Star Wars.
Yeah,
thank you.
Oh man, I thought that was great. Yeah, the thing about the action sequence again is it's not basic, for lack of a better word. You know, like, you know, at first I'm thinking, okay, there's a train, there's gonna be a little shootout, whatever. But there are some very unexpected things that happen there. And what's always great is when things go wrong. You know, and I hope, you know, anyone making film or television should know this. Like, things should go wrong.
It reminded me a lot of the train scene in Solo.
Right.
And the fight on top of it. And actually, you know what? The fight on top of the Rhydonium hauler.
In Mando season 2. Yeah.
They were jumping on there. They were fighting, brawling. It was funny.
And that was one of my favorite moments of The Mandalorian. And I think this was even better. To me, this is just as good as the train heist in Solo. And I don't know, maybe it'll take a second viewing, you know, to say, is this actually better? But it was
that
really
the Tusken warrior that helped train Boba throw down.
Oh,
that
yeah.
dude's amazing.
All right. Now, Steve, I think. So you, the one that's training him, I think, is a woman, correct? This looks like a female Tusken Raider to me.
I didn't get that impression, but I will.
The one that's got some red.
I didn't notice that.
I will 100% guarantee that right now. I will go on record. I don't know if that's established or not, but
I thought you were going to get crazy and apply something different.
And what?
I thought you were going to get crazy and apply something different, like it was a former Jedi.
Okay, well, not exactly. But here's what I'm wondering. Like, we still haven't seen Fennec. We still don't know how they met. And she's...
Who met?
Boba and Fennec Shand. Do we know? We don't know how they met, do we?
He saved her in the desert in season 1 of Mandalorian.
True, he did. Right. But is that where they met? Or did they already know each other?
Oh, okay.
And I'm just wondering, like, I'm getting this weird, you know, maybe this person just continues being the Tusken Black Widow. I don't know. But maybe at some point she's going to take off that thing and be somebody. And I know, Steve. This is one of those stupid things us Star Wars fans do that we probably shouldn't do, which is just like expect that everything is going to be some big reveal. But with her, for some reason, I'm thinking like, dude, look, she's an amazing fighter. Like, she's better than Boba, right? Like, I think that's been established. Like, she can easily take Boba. Now she's training her, training him to be basically on her level. She's dressed in all black, but with some red accents. So I'm just wondering, you know, like, could it be Fennec? If it's not Fennec, like, I don't expect it to be anybody else. But I'm just wondering, you know, maybe that's a thing. Because here's what I'm also expecting, Steve.
Oh.
You know?
Okay.
Because here's another possibility. I think there's a chance.
I now have figured out why you're... Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, so here's another thing, right? Because, like, one of the things I think could happen on this show, I think that these Tusken Raiders that he's rolling with right now could end up getting wiped out. Like, you could have a pretty dark, you know, Boba motivation. Things could take a dark turn where a lot of them get killed off and that drives him even more. Or something, you know, something like that could, again, going back to sort of a Dances with Wolves kind of thing.
Yep.
And what I love about this, too, is that he becomes attached, right? So to me, we talked about, like, before the show came out, we talked on the Skywalk about, like, what could motivate somebody? Like, if you're going to make Boba nice, right? Or even respectful and unified, there should be a really good reason that he's just a, like, that he's no longer just an I don't care, I'm in it for myself bounty hunter, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think this show is establishing, like, the one thing that can do that is kids. Like, I think, honestly, like, what's really cool is you see Boba watching the kids in this episode and being, like, just kind of happy, you know? And that's, like, a real thing, man. So, like, if you're going to sell me on somebody, like you said at the beginning, you know, he's a changed man for sure. And if there's one way for someone like Boba Fett to change to that degree, it's kids and family, you know, and that may sound basic or hokey, but I mean, that's the truth. And that's what got me in this episode too. And like, this is one of the reasons why I thought, like, okay, Robert Rodriguez did not direct this episode, not to keep crapping on the poor guy, but I'm like, man, there's so much heart in this and it's so earned and legit. Mm-hmm. And like, man, so I don't know. I think that could happen. I think they could end up getting wiped out and maybe like Fennec is the only one left. Maybe that's what, you know, drives her away and she ends up being, you know, I know this is crazy theory, might be completely wrong.
Okay. You know what? I think that would not be completely wrong because in The Bad Batch, Fennec is with the little girl, Omega.
True.
And in cahoots somewhat with Cad Bane. And
oh, but you know what? I think you just proved my theory wrong. Because she is in The Bad Batch, which goes way back. So she was already Fennec, like, before that. So she wouldn't become Fennec after this. Yeah,
that's within like 5 years of Revenge of the Sith.
Ah, dang it. So now, and I said I'm not going to edit the episode, so I can't cut out my stupid wrong theory anymore. Anyways, I guess that's not going to happen, Steve. So do you think she could be anyone? Is there anyone that she could turn out to be? I don't know. Maybe that's it.
Well, you've definitely, and I can't pull it up right now, unless I completely just stay mute and search around for pictures. But I mean, if it is a woman, who knows? I don't know.
Unless she went in hiding from the Empire. Settled in with the Tuskens, the same way Boba's doing. Not that he's,
I mean, it's a pretty big person. It's at least as tall as, the person's at least as tall as Boba Fett.
Yeah, yeah. So. Well, apologies in advance to all the Moof Milkers for making you sit through that theory, which is probably not true. Yeah.
And it took me so long to get there, too. I'm like, I didn't want to call out the show host like
and,
that.
And you unraveled it so easily. You're just like, oh, yeah, like, remember when she was in The Bad Batch, dude? Yeah, okay, pal. Another reason I loved the writing of this episode.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, Favreau was trying this time. Your lives are a gesture of our civility. I thought that was a terrific line. When Boba's like, hey, your lives are your reward for this transaction. We're sending you home. We're not killing you. Be grateful. That whole thing was just so good, man.
Who did he even say that to?
He said that to the leader of the Pikes.
The Pikes. Yeah.
The Pikes. Yeah. Which
as he was holding court.
Do you remember if we've seen what they actually look like under the helmets before? Because we definitely didn't see it in Solo.
No, I didn't. I don't remember. I'd have to watch Solo again. Yeah. I don't actually remember seeing the Pikes in Solo. I remember hearing them referred to.
Yeah, I mean, they were sort of an afterthought on Kessel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Steve, I think we have covered most of the things in this episode, though I do have a couple of more notes. The engineer on the train, Talk about practical effects being awesome. Now, it's entirely possible that some of that was CG, that robot was CG. I don't know, because it is a lot easier.
Yeah, I'm thinking 100%. I'm thinking 100% on that.
You think it's 100% CG?
Oh, well, yeah. It leapt out of the train, out of the desert.
Well, that part, yeah, sure. But yeah. But no, I mean, look, the skilled thing to do is to mix both, right? So like when they first show
inside the train.
Yeah, inside the train.
Johnny Cab from Total Recall.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it looked awesome. I thought that was really cool. Whether it's CG or not, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. You know, the point is it looked real. And I thought that was a lot of fun. That dude was crazy, man. Like, and he was pretty committed to like hanging with the Pikes. I think like,
yeah,
you know,
no, he didn't want to give it up.
Most train conductors would be like, oh, you took over the train? Cool. I'll go wherever you want. Like, just don't hurt me, you know?
Yep. But no, I'm out.
Steve, do they have any budget left after this episode?
Of course. It was all in the volume, man.
I don't, man.
Okay, I don't think it was all in the volume.
I mean, like, dude, this episode to me, like all of that action, it felt like the first episode of season 2 of The Mandalorian, the one with Cobb Vanth and the crate dragon and everything. And it was just like, man, like the scale of this, you know, Jeff and I talked last time about if we were in non-pandemic times, mm-hmm. would they show these in movie theaters? Like the way they, you know, we talked about how they'll show World Series games or NFL playoff games in movie theaters, or they started doing that before the pandemic. Like
they hadn't previous. I mean, did they show any Mando episodes in season 1?
Did Mando start? So season 1 was pre-pandemic?
Yeah.
Oh, I guess you're right. I guess they didn't. You know, but like
yeah, we didn't, because March of 20 is when the thing really took off, and I think we got the season premiere.
You're right.
That previous.
To me, the thing is, like, you're going to make an episode that big, like the Crate Dragon episode of Mando. And it's like, man, it'd be great for people to be able to watch that in a theater.
That would have been awesome.
So, like, I don't think...
Even in IMAX.
Yeah, exactly.
That scene itself.
And I don't think Disney would have ever done that as, like, a wide release thing. Oh, sorry.
I don't think every episode would have benefited much from that.
I agree.
I mean, there was some confined space episodes in that.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have went to the episode. I would have went to the theaters to see every app. It wouldn't have mattered. But
oh, totally. Yeah. And I think it would have made sense to do for the Crate Dragon episode, for example. Mm-hmm. I think with the Book of Boba Fett, with this current season, it would be like maybe you do the first episodes together. But definitely like this episode felt just way up a notch in terms of scale. And I just thought it was incredible.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Also, loved the sort of final scene with Boba joining the Tusken Raiders in a dance. Steve, I looked this up because I couldn't remember what it's called.
That was after he crafted his own.
Oh, right. His own gaffy stick.
So to speak.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, Steve, gaffy that stick, reminded me. Yeah, go ahead.
Maybe I should have known this, but when he was wielding that thing in season 2 of The Mandalorian, I had no idea how much wood that was made out of.
True.
Because when he was dragging it mm-hmm. along the sand before he went and, you know, Tiger Woods, that guy's helmet almost right off his face.
Yeah.
It sounded metallic. Right. And he was dragging the horn of it.
That's true.
So I thought it was a little bit more metal and a little heavier than what they kind of showed us him crafting.
Right.
But
I mean, it looked like a pretty solid branch, you know, like what I liked about it. Cause at first you think, well, if it's just wood, like, would it really be like that great a weapon? But then when
must be fairly dense.
Yes. Yeah. And I think they conveyed that. And, you know, in real life, that was probably styrofoam and weighed like half an ounce, but like they sold it as like a pretty weighty thing. And then they craft it and then they put it in the fire to really like, you know,
forged
in the flames of Tatooine. So I thought that was pretty incredible. And the dance that they do at the end, I'm guessing, Steve, I don't know if you remember, mm-hmm. but in Disney Gallery for The Mandalorian Season 2, Temuera Morrison, who plays Boba Fett, of course, did his traditional Maori Haka dance. Yes, I looked that up. I wouldn't have remembered that. Indigenous people of New Zealand. So I'm guessing maybe that's what that is. And they incorporated that into the show, which I think is awesome.
Part of his Maori heritage.
Yeah.
Now, he said he's definitely incorporated that into his character.
Mm-hmm.
From the little that I read of this episode, I didn't quite see them overtly say that was what the dance was from, but it stands to reason. That's what it was. That's where its basis is.
Yeah, it makes sense. And you know, like, mm-hmm. why not? Right. But I think it's really cool. And I'm thinking like, man, like this dude, like he just so owns the character now and it's great. And I think the more that you let somebody like him or any actor or actress just incorporate things from, you know, their real life, their personal life, you know, mm-hmm. they're just going to live in it more and the character's going to feel more real. I think that's awesome.
Right. I mean, just like Bill Burr.
Yeah. Yeah. They were like, hey kid, you want to bring your styrofoam medium sized Dunkin' Donuts cup on set? Go ahead.
Yeah.
Knock yourself out, kid.
What would they say on Mandalore? Oh, the shame.
Oh man. He was so good. I had one final note, Steve, which is this,
mm-hmm.
that trippy lizard, man.
Like, oh yeah.
That whole sequence.
That little Geico gecko lizard really working overtime to sell him insurance.
Yeah.
I did not expect that thing to leap off that little wicker Petri dish that he handed him and fly straight up his nose.
Yeah. And Bobo wasn't expecting to get the Patrick Mahomes deal on his car insurance either.
No, which, you know, it worked out for him.
It worked out. You know, it reminded me of the, I don't know if you've ever seen The Simpsons when Homer, they go to a fair, a state fair, and there's this like super flaming hot pepper that like nobody can handle supposedly. So Homer coats it with wax and swallows it whole. And he's like, yeah, that wasn't so bad. And then he just totally trips out. And he goes and has this like completely hallucinogenic vision in this like Southwest style desert.
He didn't expect the wax to deteriorate.
No, of course not. No.
Amidst a stomach acid.
Even thinking of the wax was like kind of a leap for Homer, right?
It's next level Homer, yeah.
Next level Homer. Oh man, Steve, I thought this episode was amazing.
It was. I was kind of hoping we got back to his current day. But the way it ended with that Maori style dance scene was really good.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, you know, going on almost an hour long. So they didn't have time to get back and do more modern day scene with them. Reserve that for the next episode.
Right. Yeah. And speaking of next episode, like going forward, I do expect there will be some episodes that are much shorter and pretty basic. But I think there's also, I mean, there was so much character growth in this episode. I think we can expect a lot more of that too. So, what's great about it, I think we have no idea where this is going and I can't wait to find out. Steve, quick shout out before we end, shout out to the HoloNet Marauders.
Who are they?
Who also have a Star Wars podcast and they're also, Steve, from the great state of Taxachusetts.
No.
Yeah.
Really?
Just found this out. Yeah, because apparently we all have a mutual love of Sidon Athano and his first mate Quigold or Qui-Gold, however you pronounce it.
I don't know what that means.
Total background characters from The Force Awakens. They ended up getting their own book and their own comic, and I just love those guys. Long story.
I need to see a picture.
Yeah.
If I saw a picture,
I'll show it to you later. But we kind of connected around that, and good to have Star Wars podcast friends all around the state. So shout out to them. Listen to their episode, a recent episode. I think it was their like Book of Boba preview, and it was really good. Really enjoyed it. So check those guys out.
I will at least subscribe and download.
Yeah.
I might not listen, but I'm definitely going to subscribe and download.
It's the least you can do, Steve.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe leave them a review just on blind faith.
5 stars, no text.
Steve, thank you so much for being here. And we definitely have to have you back on, you know, because people need to know that you and Jeff are not the same person. You need to appear in the same place at the same time.
Jeff's a little more lively than I am.
He wants to be on with you too. We actually wanted to fight.
I don't believe it.
Yeah, you know, well, we have some beef. So we all need to get this resolved. Get some beef.
Are we going to talk about Dash Rendar?
Yeah, we'll talk about Dash. Yeah. We'll talk about...
He better not show up. Better not show up in Boba Fett.
We'll talk about that trash. What's his name? What's that bounty hunter that you think is cool?
That I think is cool?
Yeah.
Cad Bane?
Yeah. Yeah. That's
Everyone
the one.
Everyone thinks he's cool.
No, nobody does. He's trash.
Wow. You are in the minority, my friend.
This is Brett.
This is Steve.
And we're just talking about Star Wars, the Book of Boba Fett on the Skywalk.